Podcasting from Knoxville, along the banks of the mighty Tennessee River, this is the Startup Knox podcast featuring interviews with local entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Brandon Bruce, and today we continue our series of interviews in partnership with Webb School of Knoxville. Each student in the Introduction to Entrepreneurship and Design Thinking course will interview a local entrepreneur. In this episode, Spencer Bernard, class of 2022, interviews Will Bunch, owner of Oakey's Pharmacy.
The floor is yours. The interview is yours.
I'm Spencer Bernard from X-Period Entrepreneurship at Webb School of Knoxville, and I'm owner of Oakey's Pharmacy, Will Bunch, here with me today. So my first question is, what made you want to become a pharmacist in the first place?
Well, it was, I have always said that I'm a beneficiary of unusual opportunity, and I grew up in the used car business. And when I went to college, I didn't want to go to college. My parents made me go to college. My grandfather had a third grade education. He couldn't read or write. And so he mandated it. All of his family went to school. So when I got to college, my advisor asked me, says, what do you want a degree? What do you plan on doing for a living? And I said, well, I'm going to be a used car dealer. And she says, well, you don't need a degree for that. And I says, well, don't tell me that. Tell my parents. They're making me go. And so anyway, I said, sign me up something easy. And she said, well, health and PE would be an easy degree to get. And I says, okay, that sounds good. And I was probably 30 days into my first quarter. Back then we were on quarters. I was in 30 days of my first quarter of college. And of course, I struck up a relationship with a lady that was going to pharmacy school. And I guess she coerced me into going in that direction. And the rest was history. So, you know, I did a 6-year program in less than 4 years. My mentality was always that time is money. So I wanted to get through school as quickly as I could because I figured at the time, I think pharmacist was making $60,000 or $70,000 a year. And I was thinking for every year that I'm in school, I'm losing that. So I went every opportunity that I had to get through.
So with that time is money mentality, why did you choose to create Oakey's rather than just getting a job in another place?
Well, I did. I actually worked for Rite Aid. I've owned my own business. I've been self-employed for 23 years. And I did work. I worked for a company called Rite Aid, which was a chain of pharmacies. I started with them in 1989. And of course, I opened my first store in 99. But, you know, the reason why I worked for the other guys, because I was enjoying my sidekicks. I mean, I was always, you know, growing up in the used car business, I was always buying and selling, and working for somebody else gave me that time and opportunity to do that. I mean, all these side hustles. I've sold everything from tube socks to hubcaps to I even sold a spider once. I used to sell silk ties to my professors in college, antiques. But I had a commercial property that I had for sale that I'd bought on speculation. And I had worked for some independent pharmacies, and I kind of got to know the business aspect of it and the business model. It was totally different than the chain business model. And I kind of saw, you know, an opportunity. And I had this commercial property that I couldn't sell at the time. I had a family member who was a contractor. And we started running some numbers. And, you know, I was debt-free. And I thought, well, you know, you always want to figure your worst-case scenario. So, you know, whenever you're thinking about something or doing something or jumping into something, you always want to know, what's the worst case scenario. And the worst case scenario here was, I was going to have him build me a shower and a little room in the back of the pharmacy. in case, you know, things didn't go as well as I planned, I would have a place to live. I mean, I actually lived in the pharmacy for 6 months. And, everything turned out all right. And my business model mirrored the ones that I come to recognize when I work for the independent pharmacists.
So you said your business model mirrored the other companies. What makes Okies different from the other companies?
Well, the one thing that you still can sell with independent pharmacies is service. 90% of our business is insurance. And so your other 10% is cash or less. And so you use that 10% of cash customers as your advertisement. And as far as the difference between us and the chains is, like I said, the service aspect. There was a time in my life I had left the house. We were going on vacation and I had forgot my blood pressure pills and I was already in Knoxville and I wasn't going to go back. And I owned my own store at the time, but I stopped at a Walgreens early in the morning. There was no one in the store. I didn't let them know. I didn't want to pull the professional card. I didn't want to say, you know, I'm a pharmacist, but I said, if you don't care, could you get me 7 days worth of blood pressure medicine? I gave them my bottle and I said, I'll just pay cash. 30 minutes later, I'm looking around. There's no one in the store. And I finally went up to them and I says, you know, is my prescription ready? And they said, no, we've got you in line. And I says, well, there's no one in the store. And then it's when I said, would it help me any to expedite this process if I told you I'm a pharmacist? Oh, yeah, you should have told us that. We would have got you out here sooner. I said, what's the holdup? And they says, well, our policy is to hold you in here 30 minutes so you'll shop. So that's the mentality that they have. And my mentality is to get you in and out. You know, back to the point, everybody's time is worth something. And that's what we're known for, is to get you in and out in a timely manner.
So with that being said, what's your favorite part of providing for people in need through your pharmacy?
Excuse me, say that again.
What's your favorite part of providing for people through your pharmacy?
You really get a lot of, when you do something for somebody that's not based on monetary terms. I mean, there's been several times that I've had to, you know, open the store up at midnight or stay late and wait for somebody or know for a fact that somebody couldn't afford something and you give it to them. So those circumstances, I guess, and then here recently with the epidemic, the pandemic has been something that's been very satisfying. You know, pharmacies have been the go-to place for vaccinations, and we've given out over 500 different vaccinations. So that's been very satisfying.
So mentioning the vaccines, how has the epidemic changed Okies?
Well, it hadn't really changed a whole lot as far as our business. I mean, it's created foot traffic, but, you know, a lot of it was people that was out of town, so it's not somebody that's going to return. But I think it did give people, gave us more of a professional stance in the community. You know, I think a lot of people just thought that pharmacies were a business that lick, stick, and pour, you know, count pills and get it out the door and bill the insurance. So it has gave us some kudos in that respect.
Okay. If you could change one thing about how you started Okies, what would it be?
Well, any business that you get into, the your biggest overhead, business 101, is your salaries. And looking back on it, I had a few people on my payroll that I probably had their salaries too high. But there's one thing that I'm known for in my business and with my employees is that we have low turnover. I have a good friend who has a pharmacy in Harriet, Tennessee, and he always paid everybody minimum wage, and he had turnovers, you know, every year. And, you know, I guess looking back at 23 years, you know, at the money that I could have saved, it just depends on, you know, what you want to deal with. Do you want to deal with the turnovers or do you want to retain good employees? So, but there was a couple of people that I had on payroll, but I wouldn't, you know, as far as a business model, I don't know that there's anything that I would change. The circumstances that was at hand fell into place. So, you know, whenever you're out, whenever you jump off the bridge to do this, you know, you either have to recognize the opportunity or you have to create it. And I did both. So
a similar question, what would you change about the whole marketing industry or like the whole pharmacy industry if you could?
Well, if I could change it? Oh, yeah. If I could, wave a magic wand. Yes. The PBMs in pharmacy, the pharmacy benefits managers. They're the middleman that really is raking all pharmacy businesses, chains and independents, across the coals. I mean, it's used to when I got into the business, the PBM, and a PBM is a company that facilitates the claim. You know, when I'm billing a patient's claim to their insurance, there's a guy in the middle. It's called a PBM, a pharmacy benefits manager, that facilitates that claim. They used to charge 6 cents. Now they charge anywhere from $6 and on up. And then at the end of the year, they charge even more fees. So that's where this business is getting punished. And it's the insurance company all across healthcare. All healthcare providers are facing the same challenges that we do, and it's all about the insurance companies. So if I could wave a magic wand, I would eradicate PBMs. I don't know why they have to be there. It seems like we could deal directly with the insurance company.
So how do you compete with other pharmacies through marketing and advertisement?
So, you know, I guess if I was ever going to open up another store, and I've got two, or I had two, got one now, I would open up next to a chain just for the fact that they've already created the foot traffic. Like I said before, 90% of our business is third parties, is insurance. And so your copay is the same whether you go to CVS or you go to a mom and pop store. And service is where we capitalize on getting that business. If anybody's ever had to deal with going to a drugstore and getting a prescription, you know what I'm talking about.
Does anybody have any other questions?
Questions for Will about the pharmacy business? I'm curious to follow up, Will, about what you just said. I mean, the old adage is sort of like the best place to put a gas station is next to another gas station, because at least people are pulling off the road and you know they need gas. And at that point, you're part of the considered set. So then they're going to evaluate, you know, the brand, and is your store cleaner, and do you like the bathrooms, and is the price on the big sign a little bit better, right? Is a couple cents lower here or there. It sounds like you're saying the same thing at pharmacy. Like if you had your druthers, you might be right next to or across the street from a Walgreens or a CVS or one of the other big changes, because people are showing up.
Absolutely. I would build right next door to them. I mean, something is told to me years ago by a banker who's well-known in the Knoxville area. He and I rode around together before I opened up this business in 1999. And he said to me, he said, competition breeds business. And I remember that phrase. And at the time when I worked for Rite Aid, we were the only store in Maynardville, the only drugstore. And that drugstore was doing 3,000 prescriptions a week. And I was working. I opened my store up, and there was two stores then. And the two stores combined was doing 5,500 scripts a week. And then a third store opened up, and I knew them personally. And all three of us combined was doing 8,000 prescriptions a week. So the adage of what he said to me, competition breeds business, is true. I didn't understand it. A lot of people don't want competition. They think it's bad, but competition's good. Keeps everybody honest, and I think it creates business.
As you think about the future for Okies, do you anticipate additional locations? Are you actively scouting and looking for places where you might do that exact model?
No, I have bought two different pieces of commercial property for expansion, and I did that 10 years ago. But I have 10 years ago, I semi-retired. So I'm doing other things now that I like, as far as land development and selling silk ties and horses and cows and guineas and watches and tube socks and the stuff that I used to sell, concert tickets. I love the game of hustle. So I'm doing that now. And I've still got the one store that kind of runs itself. So.
Very good. So talk about the game. So how are you going about it? Are there particular sites, online marketplaces? Is this in-person retail stuff? And how are you getting your goods, and who are you selling them to?
You're talking about my side hustle?
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of side hustle.
There's always opportunities out there. I mean, you just got to know the value of them. There's always customers that want to sell their livestock. I still sell concert tickets and parking spaces for football games. Right now I'm buying and selling bourbon. I've got an antique pharmaceutical collection. I've got probably 20 antique pharmacy books. I just sold one the other day. It's an auction house in New York. I sold it for $450. And I think I gave $25 for it from eBay. So as long as you know the value of what you're buying, there's different places out there that's where you make your money in business, any business. It's when you buy, it's not when you sell.
That one sit in for a minute, because that's interesting.
You always make your money when you buy, not when you sell. Always remember that.
Because I think I and maybe most of us view things with an eye toward the exit, toward the sale. Like, what's going to happen? Is this appreciating and so forth? But
well, especially in my especially in the business and pharmacy. Okay, so I said to you that 90% of my business is insurance. Okay, well, the insurance company doesn't pay me what I want them to pay me. They pay me what they want to pay me. Okay. So if I know that I'm getting $4.90 per prescription total, then I've got to buy it for less than that. Right. So I've got to buy it for less than what I know I'm going to get out of it. And so a lot of times at the end of the day, I spend an hour, sometimes more, at different wholesalers trying to buy drugs cheaper than the other guy. so I can sell it to the insurance company for what I know that I'm going to get out of it. So, that hour that I spent on the phone trying to buy drugs cheaper, that's where I'm making my money.
Makes sense. I think you may have seen it. I don't know that I've watched it. I've heard about it. But there's a pretty famous entrepreneur. You'll see his books. He's a pretty popular personality on social, especially named Gary Vaynerchuk. Had a very successful wine business, one of the original websites that would like review wines, buy, sell wines, so forth. He's got a big marketing company based in New York, but it has a big presence actually just down south in Chattanooga. They opened up a satellite there. But he has a famous video or a series of videos where he's essentially doing exactly as Will is talking about. So the conceit of the video is, I've got 20 bucks. Let's say that's all I have. And I'm going to make money out of this 20 bucks. And then he just films himself doing it, going on eBay, finding stuff where he knows the value of it and the seller is selling it for less, right? So a deal is to be had. And he'll buy something and then trade it up. And there's some pretty famous apocryphal stories of people doing that, you know, starting with a pencil and ending up with a car on eBay because they just keep trading different stuff, different people that value things differently, especially when you get into sort of an arbitrage situation where something has specific value to a specific person. Like a car is a car is a car. As soon as it's an antique car, then it's super different. So obviously he's not selling this book about antique book about pharmacies for the value of the paper or even for the information inside, because the industry has moved on, it's probably out of date, but it's because someone values the history and so they want to own that book, and so it's way beyond the 25 that he was able to get it for on eBay. So anyway, fun videos if you ever want to check them out, plus a unique last name is Gary Vaynerchuk, and years ago he said that he's hustling and he's going to try to buy, I think he wanted to buy the Mets, or was it a football game? It's the Giants, you're right. So he wants to buy the Giants someday. So that's his like ultimate career goal, or at least part of it. So we'll see if he ends up pulling it off at some point. But it's the same sort of hustle where he likes to show up. You know, I mean, he's a huge successful business person, but he loves to go to like flea markets and just trade, because it's just for the fun of it. It's the fun of the game. And so the videos are pretty neat to watch.
One of the lessons that I learned, and I was 10 years old, and hanging with my grandfather who couldn't read and write, but he was a math wizard. And we went to Atlanta. We'd go to Atlanta once a month. There was a bank sale there. It was a repossessed sale. And I was 10 years old, and we had to get up at 3 a.m. to get to Atlanta by 6 to look at the cars. And he found a car that he liked, and he said, he told me, I'd give $5,000 for that car. So we went inside, and the banker said he wanted $4,000. I thought, man, we're going to buy it. I thought he's just going to say, I'll take it. He said, no. He said, I can't give $4,000. And he just told me he was going to give $5,000. He told the banker, he said, no, I can't give $4,000, but I'll give you $3,000. Well, the banker took him up on it. So he made an extra $2,000 from his original thought that he was going to give $5,000 for the car. So he made money when he bought it. And so you can't always assume, that whatever you sell something for, that there's not even more money to be made. You can always make more money by buying it for less money. And going back to your example there about that gentleman, me and Spencer's dad have actually talked about doing that. I've actually challenged him. I'd like to do that for 30 days. Start off with nothing, and seeing at the end of the 30 days who has acquired the most goods and services. I think that would be a unique challenge, and have it documented along the way.
I like it. We should put something like that together.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Be a good timeline. It'd be just kind of be fun to see what happens, because there'll be a lot of lessons to learn along the way. Sometimes you can get stuck with something where it's like, uh-oh, right? Market falls out, something, then you're stuck with something. Maybe you don't even want it anymore. And that happened. I mean, maybe he paid $3,000 for the car, and maybe it turned out to be a lemon. He didn't know. It's hard to tell.
That's right.
Could have happened, right? inherent risk that he took, but at least he took a $3,000 instead of a $5,000 risk. So he's also limiting risk.
Yeah, you do take a risk. I remember my daddy one time, he was in the car business as well, and I remember him losing some money. And I thought it was bad. And he said, son, he said, if we made money, if this was easy and we made money on everything, everybody would get into it. So, you know, you lose some and you win some. You just hope that you win more than you lose, just like a soccer team or a football team.
Yeah, I think even thinking back to it, because we've had a chance to do a number of interviews in the class, I think at least two of the entrepreneurs that have come in, maybe one in this class, maybe both in the other class, have said that they've lost a lot more times than they won, but that their wins were bigger.
Yeah.
By number, they would say, well, I've lost like a dozen times. Strikeouts, we'll call them, towards the baseball analogy, but they got a grand slam on one of them, and it's more than, from a financial perspective, more than erased all the small losses they took along the way, because they got a grand slam out of the one. And
as long as you can afford the loses.
Yeah.
As long as you can afford the loss, always prepare yourself for the worst case scenario. Don't jump in the deep end if you can't swim.
good advice for an aspiring swimmer. That's good. Any other questions from anybody for Mr. Bunch? Well, thanks a ton for coming in. We appreciate you spending time with us this morning.
Sounds great. Good luck, guys.
You got it. Thank you. Cheers.
Bye-bye.